Welcome to the Business Leadership Series, where we engage with leaders who are making an impact on their worlds and who want to share their knowledge and experience for your personal and professional growth. The following interview is designed to inspire you to become the best leader you can be. Your host, Derek Champagne, is the founder and CEO of The Artist Evolution, a full-service agency building successful brands, marketing tools, and campaigns, and also the author of the best-selling book, Don't Buy a Duck. And now, let's begin today's Leadership Series interview.
Welcome to the Business Leadership Series, where our goal is to inspire you to become the best leader that you can be. We've got Pat McDaniel with us today. Pat, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Derek. Great to be on.
And Pat, you're the founder of wiseinsights.net. It's a website that's dedicated to helping motivated but wary people to keep moving forward and finding the smartest path towards their success. Very cool. Love the concept. You sent me an infographic here that I've been looking through before the show started. Talk to me, tell me a little bit about your background, and then I'm going to come back and ask you a little bit more about defining wary for me. But I bet you a lot of our listeners can relate to what you're talking about today.
Well, my background, so when I was in the first grade, is that how far back you want me to go?
You bet. Anything that's relevant to your story.
Oh, my gosh. you know, I'll just kind of sum it up like this. So I grew up in Atlanta. Well, I grew up out west for a while and then moved to Atlanta, went to school there, did my undergrad there, actually got a degree in accounting, and don't ask me why, but I didn't do that for more than a couple years. I stayed long enough to get a CPA certificate, which I promptly stuck in a drawer somewhere because I didn't want to do that. I ended up going off to get a master's degree at a seminary and was a pastor for about 15 years. It was a great experience for the most part, but it had a few challenges. And so, you know, I've transitioned over to, did some sales and sales consulting. Currently am working in a variety of ways in the area of marketing. So I'm a digital marketing strategist for an agency in the Boston area. So I work remotely from home here in Atlanta, which is great, except for when, you know, the kids are around and they're wondering why you aren't doing stuff with them and you're actually trying to tell them you're at work. So
that makes it challenging.
But, you know, currently I am really trying to focus on my wiseinsights.net site, which is frankly really exciting to me. It's a very unique site from my perspective, and I'll be happy to fill you in on that. But that's my background. Just I've had more than enough careers, to say the least.
Yeah. So tell me about, so you focus on helping motivated but wary people. Define wary for me in the sense that you're talking about.
Well, all right. So a lot of your listeners are probably just like me, whether you're in a business context, as an employee, or whether you own a business, or whether you're just straight entrepreneur doing trying different things, you know, you go into those things with a lot of energy and a lot of zeal and excitement and stuff, and then you know you look back and you say, why am I still pedaling and I'm not, you know, I feel like I'm going up against up the hill against the wind and all that, and you know, at some point you kind of hit the wall, and for me, I've had several different entrepreneurial ventures, and you know, a lot of times I found myself just, you know, I'm not giving up, but I'm not as motivated as I was because it's, you know, you get beat up a bit. Right. So I know there's a lot of folks out there who, you know, jump into things initially and are all excited, but you know, it's going to come where you get kind of worn down by trying to keep the thing moving.
Yeah, right. And that, you know, I'll tell you from personal experience myself too, is even when something's running successful, your motivations can change and you get more comfortable. And even then you can start to get wary. It's not just for those that are doing the grind, trying to get something off the ground.
Correct. And so for me, you know, part of it, I sort of have dual goals with the website. One of them is just to encourage and to some degree, say, inspire people to keep moving. Part of it is just wanting people to read the content and go, oh, you get it. You get it. You get the fact that, you know, this is how I'm feeling right now, and this is why I'm, you know, feeling the way I'm feeling and that kind of stuff. So that's part of it. And then the other part of it is just teaching them a lot of really cool stuff that'll help them, you know, my little slogan is, you know, finding the surest path to the summit of success. And I kind of look at myself like one of the terms I've been using of late for myself is I'm kind of like the investigating Sherpa. So a Sherpa, as many of your audience know, is somebody who kind of helps Sir Edmund Hillary up Mount Everest. They've been on the mountain several times before, but they know things like don't go too close to that edge because it'll drop off. And so for me, I'm basically, you know, maybe on the mountain, but I'm investigating a lot of interesting things that I'm learning from people ahead of me, as well as research on things that you can do differently to overcome certain things or just stay out of the pits, because there's a ton of pits out there and just morasses and quicksand and all that kind of stuff. And you just don't see it until suddenly it's too late.
Hmm. So is your focus on people that have hit the burnout, are wary, or is it to really avoid those pitfalls?
Probably a little of both. I mean, you know, it just depends on the drive of the folks. But I target achievers. I don't think my content's going to be particularly inspiring to people who are comfortable, you know, working, you know, their little job and they don't have aspirations to go any further. But most people have some sort of aspiration, so hopefully I can fit in, you know, provide them some value.
Great. That's great. So tell me what you've got, and this is my favorite people to learn from are those that have had the personal experience, because I feel like your content and what you share is going to be the most relevant and connected. But you're passionate about sharing your own story of repeatedly hitting a wall despite hard work. Tell me a little bit about some of those valleys or what you learned from them, and then how you realized that this was something that you should help others with.
Yeah. So I went from a context working. All right. So I was on staff as a pastor in a pretty good sized church. And I had probably almost 10 years where I could do no wrong. I mean, my particular ministry was a real strong conduit for growth for the church. I was a builder. I loved, you know, trying new things and sort of my entrepreneurial spirit. And so I went from that context to going out west where I felt like God wanted me to go and just running into, you know, a couple of buzzsaws, some really difficult experiences that were, I don't know, you don't foresee those kinds of things. And, you know, toward the end, I just was, I just found myself getting really disillusioned with, you know, the vision and discouraged and, I was just downright mad. I was just really depressed and feeling like, you know, because it was really my baby. I mean, If anybody has started a business and, you know, everybody probably has at least one or two business failures before they get one that works.
Yeah.
But, you know, you go into it like it's your child and it's, you know, you do everything you can to make it happen and go forward and you put a lot of hours in and a lot of effort. And, you know, when it slowly starts to die and you don't know how to save your child, it's a gut-wrenching blow. So for me, that was kind of what made me realize, oh, wow, you know, this is not all, and this is one of my mottos, is life is not linear. Despite reading certain books or certain materials that make it sound like if you'll just do A and then B, then C happens. And you're like, oh, okay. And it actually does for some people. Ironically, the next time they do A and B, C doesn't happen, but, you know, Z happens, and then they don't know what happened. Huh. So life is not linear, and I learned that. But there's a couple of other lessons that I really understood. I mean, what I basically figured out was that there are things above the surface that you focus on that are really necessary when it comes to building a venture. And then there are certain things below the surface that really a lot of times you don't consider, you don't think about. But if you don't factor those things in, you'll end up being like I was, where it's like, okay, work hard, check. Did this, check. Read these books, check. You know, you kind of go down all the. We brought a consultant in at one point, and he assessed every aspect of what we were doing, and he basically said, "I don't know. I mean, this is good. This is good. This is good. You're right on track." It's like, yeah, but So there are certain things that are going on, and this has been part of my motivation with Wise Insights is that there are a whole bunch of things that are basically moving us in certain directions, and we don't even know. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of research out there these days that is showing you, oh, did you know this? And much of it's really counterintuitive that, you know, I didn't know.
Right. So tell me about talk about the research behind how to make better decisions. What does that look like?
Well, so personal case in point, you know, I'm a deliberate kind of guy. I'm hopefully careful and thoughtful. I'm not impulsive and, you know, making crazy decisions and stuff. But what I found was even when I did everything correctly, I would still have outcomes that sometimes turned out really poorly. And I'd scratch my head and say, I got to get better at this because, you know, better decisions leads to a better life. And if you are making poor decisions, even if you're trying, and see, if you go and you Google, you know, poor decisions or foolish decisions, most often it's people saying, yeah, I was drunk and I was done. It's like, we're not talking about that. We're talking about people who've been trying to make the right decisions. And so, you know, for me, I started reading a lot of books, Daniel Kahneman's Thinking Fast and Slow, where he talked about a lot of research, and Chip and Dan Heath, read anything by Chip and Dan Heath. They wrote a book called Decisive, which was really, really good, and several other books that I read on decision making. And I suddenly realized that I was essentially using the wrong process. So Daniel Kahneman, he's a Nobel Award-winning economist. And one of the things he talked about was he said, I've noticed, and he kind of categorized it as, you know, what you see is all there is. There's a perspective that we human beings have, which is whatever I see within, you know, view of where my current perspective is, that's reality. And therefore, I'll make decisions on those criteria and factors and variables. When in fact, you know, there's a lot more that you can't see that you need to factor in. And that's where he has certain tricks to help you figure some of this stuff out. And so I wrote an ebook, which is on my website, free download. This basically a five-step process to making better decisions. And it uses a lot of the research that we figured out about some of the biases that we have and some of the just the wrong methodologies that we're taking into our decision-making process. So for me, and the statistics are really rather numbing in terms of the amount of decisions that are being made, even by, you know, very, very sharp people in very big companies on mergers and acquisitions or recruiting the right talent for their, and, you know, about half the time they get it totally, totally wrong. And, you know, there's got to be a better way.
So what are the things that make us miss it? Is it biases? Is it fear? Is it pride? What are the things that make us miss some making good decisions?
Well, it comes down to, at least to me, to two things. So one is process. And one of the things that Chip and Dan Heath talk about a good bit is they say one of our constant constructs in decision making is around the single option decision. Should I go to that school or not? Should I take that job or not? Should I hire that person or not? And he said, unfortunately, a single option decision is just almost guaranteed to fail. You know, and they have all these great stories about that. So if you find yourself thinking about a decision and you say or not, then you know that's not what you need to. You need to. So what the book talks about and what my ebook talks about is, you know, how do you broaden your options? How do you think through options in a way that kind of helps you see things you'd never seen before, or you never considered before? And I actually have a case study I wrote up on my website that I got a job at this agency that turned out to be just a god awful experience. And nothing personal, it wasn't yours, Derek. I remember asking myself, what did I do wrong? And it's like, I thought I was really careful and deliberate and asked the right questions and stuff. So in the case study, I basically followed the five-step process, which is what I did when I got to this current Boston agency that I work with, which is just a great agency, great workforce, great culture. It's all good. And so, you know, that's part of the problem is the process. The other part is just the cognitive biases. There's just so many things that think about it like this, Derek. The facts upon which you make your decisions are not, you're not seeing them clearly. And so when you don't see the facts clearly, but you think you do, then you make decisions on those facts, you're bound to have some sort of distorted outcome. And the statistics are just shocking with people who just don't see their own cognitive distortions and biases. And the statistics and the studies are just absolutely fascinating about, you know, people who've tested this and that or whatever. And, you know, in the end, for me, what it's done is it's given me a whole new sense of humility, you know, that I, the world is not as black and white as we want to think it is. There's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of ambiguity. We've got to be okay with that.
Can you give me some examples of some of the cognitive bias you've seen that's putting blinders on?
Well, I'll tell you one that I have, and I bet you a good bit of folks who are listening to this have it as well. So one of them is and not everybody has this, but a good number of folks have sort of an optimism bias, or you might even call it a predictive bias, okay? Mm-hmm. And the case in point would be starting a business, okay? Now, if you look at the statistics, they're very, very clear that only a certain percentage of new businesses make it. And in fact, the one that I always like to use is a restaurant. Let's say you're a great, you know, you're a great chef, you love food, and you just think, I'm going to start this restaurant, it's going to be great, and oh man, I got great food, and everyone's going to love it. And I actually wrote up an article about that. Yeah, but the reality is that within the first about 5 years, 60% of all restaurants fail. So that's pretty startling. But when you ask the people who are making the decision and they're predicting the outcome for themselves, 81% of them said they were very confident that their venture was going to go well. 33% said they had a zero chance of failure. Well, they're just fooling themselves. And right. So one of the there's things you can do to say, okay, how do I combat this? So one of the things I use quite a bit is tripwires. And a tripwire is simply a sort of a scenario that says, if this happens 6 months from now, let's say my trajectory is not going like I thought. If this happens 6 months from now, then I'm going to do this. And I've been trying to teach my children how to build tripwires so that when you get to that place where, again, you might say, for example, the example is a restaurant, you know, 6 months in or 1 year in, you know, you set a tripwire that said, you know, 40% of the people who are eating in my restaurant need to be return guests because they like it. And they, you know, and 25% of them need to be bring in friends. But when you look around at your restaurant and you're saying, you know, this is all just from advertising and nobody seems to be coming back, hello? Well, that's a tripwire that says, I need to do something different, or I need to, you know, stop throwing good money after bad, or that kind of stuff. I mean, there's just all sorts of things you do. But you do that ahead of time before you get into that situation, because once you get into the situation where you've sunk your time and your energy into it, that leads to a whole different bias, which is sort of like the IKEA, they call it the IKEA effect, where anything that you're building, you view it as being far more valuable and you're just personally invested in it and you can't see objectively at that point.
Yeah, and your mental, emotional, your physical, your financial sweat equity, it does make it hard to have a healthy perspective. I've developed and sold a few businesses, and I had one last year that was painful, and this would have been very timely for. It's hard to let go or to move on to a different direction sometimes when you have that much of your investment in any way, shape, or form.
Right, but if you're looking at it sort of on the front end, you're saying, I don't think this is going to happen, but if it does, and these things are happening, I'm making a commitment to move in this direction, and it may not be, you know, fold up the store. It may be, I've got to do this or this or that or something.
You're making adjustments based on what you call your tripwires to. Yeah, I like that. So it's more strategic than it is an emotional decision.
Correct.
Great. I like that a lot. So tell me, does this also work for someone? I mean, you talked about the optimist. I think a lot of entrepreneurs are extremely optimistic, overly optimistic. I'm one of those. And we have this vision, but sometimes we jump in too soon. What about the person that is hesitant about starting something because they just are not, they're not built like some entrepreneurs and they're just a little bit more cautious? Can they apply the same principle to have confidence to move forward and be watching for the tripwires?
Absolutely. I mean, part of what I've learned over the last couple of years is you have to know yourself. And, you know, there's things that you learn that you need to learn and other people don't need to learn those things. Mm-hmm. And so there are going to be situations where somebody is, maybe they tried a venture previously and it didn't go well. And so they're like ultra conservative and cautious. Well, that's understandable. So, you know, if you lay out your business plan and you have maybe some outside eyes assess things, you know, have them help you, you know, build some milestones and tripwires so that, you know, you can feel a little bit more confident that if I move forward, I'm not going to be taken by surprise. And so, yes, there are people out there. One of the biases that on the document, the infographic that I sent you, was a pessimism bias, which is not as common, but it's out there. And sometimes, you know, you have to fight with that one instead.
Can we talk about that for a minute? You sent me this 50 hidden influences that can wreck your decisions. It's a 7-page infographic. It's pretty fascinating. And then you also talk, there's also 4 ways to thwart the hidden decision influencers. Can you kind of go through some of that? And then it'd be great if we can share some of this graphic with the listeners when they're going through.
Absolutely. We'll put it, I'm sure, in the show notes, just, you know, where to go and get this. It's absolutely free. Just download it. And, perfect. It's really a high quality infographic.
Yeah, it is.
You know, the way it's designed is that down one side of the infographic, it covers 50 of these different biases, confirmation bias, loss aversion, which is sort of what we were touching on with the restaurant, where right. It's also called sunk cost fallacy. There's just a ton of these things, and I've tried to group them in terms of a couple of categories. So The largest category is just perspective. So how you view the situation, these all affect it quite a bit. And they have a little explanation as to what they are. And as you read them, you're going to go, oh, okay, wow, I didn't realize that. And then in the right on the left side are a bunch of really interesting sort of like case studies and statistics on some of these in particular, like the planning fallacy and how we tend to overestimate, you know, certain things and how we tend to underestimate certain things. And so if you know that, then you should be able to plan accordingly. Like, oh, this shouldn't take me more than 3 years until we hit $1 million. Well, then plan on 7, you know, just right. Because you know that. And Daniel Kahneman in his book talks a lot about just the statistical averages and regression to the mean and things like that, that you're going to be farther ahead if you follow the law of averages than you are with my situation's different. And I, you know, it's like, no, it's not. That's why that's an average. But then the other categories are memory. And this is where it gets really pernicious in my mind. Yeah. These cognitive biases don't just affect how you view life right this minute. It affects how you view your memories. And so that you pull memories from the past, but now they're getting distorted by these cognitive biases. And then you use these distorted memories to leverage a distortion toward the future, like, oh, I predicted the future correctly back then. Well, no, you didn't. Actually, you didn't.
That's fascinating. You've got here the Monday morning quarterback hindsight bias, predictive memory bias. It's the tendency to filter memory of past events through present knowledge. We're tricked into believing that we knew it all along, and it makes us overconfident on future predictions.
Wow. Right. Every sports fanatic has seen this or has been caught up in right. Why did they call the screen there? And it's like, well, you know what? If it had worked, you wouldn't be questioning it. But because it didn't work, suddenly you're like going down this wrong path. And I think part of it is just recognizing you only know so much information. And sometimes you're not omniscient. And if you make a decision, Dave Ramsey says, you know, I make a decision. If it doesn't work out, I make another decision,
yeah,
you know?
Right.
It's just not living the past of beating yourself up. So,
tell me about this hindsight bias. So do you have an example in the professional world that you've seen or that would be relevant to this?
Well, the one that I think about is the Super Bowl, where Pete Carroll was beaten up because why did you throw the pass on the 1 yard line? You had Marshawn Lynch and you had this, blah, 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 you know, and it's, the answer is, well, in hindsight, yes, that was not a good decision or whatever. But in how many times have you watched a football team, you know, line up three times in a row and can't get it over the goal line? And it's right. Like you can just plop it over the goal line with him. So, So I mean, you know, it's one of those things where they're all over. The hindsight bias is all over. You just have to watch talk radio, news programs. I mean, it's all about you should have known this. I mean, we know this now, so why didn't you know it back then? And it's like, well.
And you find business owners or you find the professionals making overconfident decisions based on that as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's scary to me that you can if you see the one below there, the researchers, Fischoff and Bias, and they basically stuck people in they had them make predictions. They had them make these predictions for what was coming up in the year, whatever. It was like, you know, 2001. And then they went back and tabulated the results of what actually happened versus what people predicted. And what people remembered them putting down on the piece of paper was very different than what they put down on the piece of paper. They were absolutely sure that the stock market, oh, I knew the stock market was going to plunge. And it's like, no, you actually said it was going to go up 20%. No, I didn't say that. And it's like, you know, so there's a lot of stuff that goes on that just makes you realize that we're being influenced by just all sorts of distortions in how we view the current situation, how we view the past, how we view the future. As you go down in the infographic, it talks about the things that how our biases affect our view of one another and social groups. And I mean, this is the basis of prejudice, is where, you know, you find yourself viewing groups differently than you view one another. And
tell me a little bit about that, the illusion of transparency.
Well, so you're married, right, Derek?
Yes, I am. Very, okay. Very happily, I might add.
All right. So the bias says people overestimate others' ability to know them and what they're thinking, and their ability to know others. They overestimate how much they can read other people. So it's a dual problem here. And so what ends up happening is, and if you're married, you've had this happen, you know, you have this argument with your spouse, and they're mad at you because you didn't know this. You didn't know what they were thinking, or you didn't know this should have bothered them. And it's like, but I'm not you. I don't think the way you do, but it doesn't matter. You're still a terrible husband because you should have known and that kind of stuff.
Right.
And so it becomes a real problem unless you understand, oh, I really don't understand people and they don't see me as clearly as I think they do. And so I'll give them the benefit of the doubt and I will operate, you know, with that understanding. You know, there's one called the false consensus effect, where we tend to overestimate the degree to which others agree with us. You get into this meeting and everyone's basically kind of nodding and you think, man, everyone's buying into this, when in fact, maybe half of them are buying into it and the other half are like going along. So, you know, you just need to understand these things so you can operate more effectively in whatever context you're facing.
It's fascinating. I'm going to ask you a few more. Tell me about the fundamental attribution error.
Well, the fundamental attribution error is just the definition is we tend to overemphasize personality-based explanations for behavior observed in others, while underemphasizing the role and power of a situational influence on the same behavior. So, as I say in the infographic, you know, you screwed up because you're an idiot. So I look at it as though there's something wrong with you and your personality, your abilities. But when I screw up, it's because of these circumstances and these things that were beyond my control. So we tend to downplay anything that relates to us. It's not my fault and this, here's all my circumstances. But we rarely take other people's don't give us excuses, and you know, you should have known. Yeah. We're just hypocrites. It's really what it was.
Yeah. Wow. So, and then you talk about physical as well. You've got a graph dedicated to the physical.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I think we're all starting to realize that don't make decisions when you're under stress. Do certain things to try to get yourself into a more neutral place, if at all possible, before making a decision. Try not to make decisions when you're fatigued. There's just a lot of really interesting studies where they were trying to figure out how world-class athletes made decisions. Because, you know, at some point in a game, you know, like if you're a soccer player, you hit the wall of fatigue, and do you start making dumb decisions because now you're fatigued, and so you make the kick when, in fact, that was a poor decision. You just, you know. And ultimately, fatigue is a very significant issue when it comes to making decisions. So, you know, decision fatigue is a big one where I guess all of us have had this experience where certain days you've just had a lot of work and a lot of things. Your brain's working hard. You're making lots of decisions. It just wears you down. And at some point, you start realizing, if you look back, you'd realize you're making poor decisions. So at some point, you just need to take a break and, you know, step back a little bit, regain a little bit of endurance, and then keep moving.
You talk about the fatigue. That's great information. Thanks for sharing that. But you talk about fatigue, emotional or stress factors, how it can often increase our desire for a higher payoff or higher risk options. I found that really interesting, the physical fatigue or hunger effects. Walk me through a few of those.
Well, all right. So, and it differs from men and women, and also from person to person. So this is part of what you have to know about yourself. So they've studied this pretty extensively, where if you're at a place where you're stressed or you're fatigued, you start to get into the what the hell attitude, you know, the hell, double or nothing, let's just do it. Because, you know, it seems like the quickest way to get a win is if I can just double my money, I'll get out of debt. And of course, you get, you know, into a worse situation there. Huh. And so a lot of times we have to recognize that whenever there's not much good that comes out of being fatigued or stressed, as far as the cortisol levels floating through your system and all that. So, you know, if you understand ahead of time that I'm hungry, I'm tired, I'm under a lot of stress or whatever, don't make decisions that really deal with risk, because you will perceive the risk to be, you know, not nearly as significant as it is, because you're thinking, oh yeah, there's something in your brain that just triggers that sense of, yeah, that's no big deal. When in fact, it's just your brain wanting to resolve things one way or the other.
Hmm. Wow, that's interesting. So tell me, can you talk about the four ways to thwart hidden decision influencers?
Well, these are really overview type ideas. So, you know, one of them I mentioned already is just to be humble. Okay, you're going to be wrong maybe as often as you're going to be right. So just be okay with that. Move along. Don't beat yourself up. And for heaven's sakes, don't be so dogmatic that you see the world correctly. And, you know, those idiot conservatives, those idiot liberals, those idiot whatever, they don't see it. And, you know, it's like, hello, a little humility would go a long way there. So that'd be the first thing. And it's not hard to have a little humility when you see all these influences. You start to realize, you know, wow, okay, I can't control any of this, or not much of it anyways. Second one is just to be aware of these biases and be aware of yourself and the areas where you tend to go one way or the other, because we're all a little bit different. A huge important solution that helps you deal with some of these biases is getting outside input. You may look at something and say, this is a slam dunk, but if you get some people who, please don't get the yes people in your life, but get the people that, you know, maybe a mentor or somebody that you respect, they're not going to tell you what you necessarily want to hear. And then they look at the situation. They may say, yeah, that sounds like a sound plan. Or they may say, well, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? And not to resist it, but to be open to it.
Right.
And once they start telling you, if you get three or four people who give you their input, it's where sort of like you know, triangulating a signal and trying to figure out where you really are, that's a good way to kind of help you start to realize where reality is.
Yeah, that's good. That accountability and having those, you know, for me, mastermind groups and being a part of those that will give you honest feedback, be encouraging, but also challenge you. And getting away from the yes people is really important, especially for those that are surrounded with yes people often.
And it's hard not to surround yourself with yes people. I mean, you really want to be the hero and the superstar and all that stuff. Right. But, you know, Doris Kearns' book, Team of Rivals, about Abraham Lincoln. Did you read that?
No, I haven't.
Oh, man, a great book. So
I will now.
So get a load of what Abraham Lincoln does. I mean, he has a strong enough character and enough, I guess, self-confidence in himself that the people that he ran against for president, he actually included them into his cabinet. And so these were people who were very, very different than him and very opposed to some of his views. But over time, they came to respect him, and he also came to respect them in new ways. And he would formulate ideas based on, you know, these different perspectives, which is not at all the way we run our government now. And so to me, I think that's super important, where you're always open to having some contrarians around you that you know are not always contrarian about everything you say, but, you know, have some good points. I tell people all the time on the political spectrum, said, you know what? The conservatives and the liberals have some good ideas, so let's not dismiss them out of hand. They actually might have some things that we can learn from.
Right. Yeah, that's good.
The only other thing I'd mentioned is just follow a process. And this kind of goes back to what Daniel Kahneman was talking about. You know, follow the statistical, you know, certainties rather than, you know, just sort of kind of going with the gut. Like, well, I just know this is going to work. Well, yeah, maybe so, but why be, you know, putting yourself out on a limb like that? So follow a process that tends to work more often than not and tends to increase your odds of success for making good decisions to counteract all these cognitive biases. Mm.
Thank you so much for being our guest today. That's very challenging. Is there anything else you want to share?
Well, I would just invite your viewers to come over to the website, wiseinsights.net, and just take a look. There's a whole bunch of good stuff there. I'm really interested in hearing, you know, on topics that people want to learn on. I just wrote an article on a study done by Professor Adam Grant about, you know, motivation, and it was a very counterintuitive solution, but the research now backs it up. Like, yeah, that's how that would work. But at the time, you know, we tend in the area of motivation to look at carrots and sticks, and that's kind of how we work right. with it. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it's like, you know, this is actually a little bit different than that. And so it's those kinds of things that I hope will be helpful to my readers, that they're going to find themselves saying, I didn't know this, but now I do, and I'm going to try to put this into action.
Excellent. Man, Pat McDaniel, thank you again for being our guest. Our listeners, go to wiseinsights.net. He's got free resources for better decisions, including his ebook, 5-Step Process to Making Better, More Successful Decisions. You definitely want to look at that. This infographic is incredible, too. I'm going to be studying. I'm taking this home to my wife, and we're going to look at this as well. She'll be fascinated with this. Pat, thanks again for being our guest, and we look forward to following the other things that you're doing and then to seeing that content that you're putting out on your amazing site.
Glad to do it, Derek, and we'll put some links in the show notes so people who are trying to drive right now can find the stuff they're looking for.
Excellent. You take care and happy holidays.
Great. Thanks, Derek. Take care.
You've been listening to the Business Leadership Series, where we engage with leaders who are making an impact on their worlds and who want to share their knowledge and experience for your personal and professional growth. This interview was designed to inspire you to become the best leader you can be.